Please pray with me. O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight. O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. A father's blessing is a powerful thing. Children have chosen colleges and careers for a father's blessing, often without ever knowing it. They've given up dreams and hopes and even true loves in exchange for a father's blessing. The absence of a father's blessing can be devastating. Children hungering for that blessing have gone looking for it in hurtful places, from streets and men and things that cannot compensate. Some have done horrible things hoping to earn that blessing. A father's blessing is a powerful thing. A father's blessing can be the soil for deep roots of a child's future, but some have withered and even died for lack of it. So it does not surprise me that Jacob lies to his father's face to cheat his brother Esau out of the blessing that belongs to him. You can't get your father's blessing by playing by the rules, not if you are a second son. By law or culture or convention, the first son gets the birthright, worth about two-thirds of the father's inheritance according to the rules recorded in the book of Deuteronomy. The system is rigged, as some of our presidential candidates might say. You can't play by the rules if you think you deserve your father's single blessing. You've got to be more cunning, more intelligent, more calculating than your older brother. As a second son myself, that is what I have always loved about this story. The second son, who by law or culture or convention is always second to his older brother, doesn't have to stay second fiddle. This second son, who possesses none of the traditionally masculine virtues, qualities that his father appreciates and encourages in his older son, that second son is always one move ahead of his older brother in this chess game of blessing. Jacob wrests a blessing from his father with wit, cunning, and deceit, the only tools that can beat unfairness codified in law, custom, or culture. You know, when you are a second son who's endured being, say, tied to a tree by your older brother, or chased on your bike at night by a car full of your older brother and his friends after they expose you to a horror film that you were definitely too young to see, or punished multiple times for throwing the first punch when your brother got away with inciting it, then you love this story. But so does anyone, daughter or son, who's ever felt second fiddle or ever found themselves outside the privilege of firstborn structures or ever found themselves excluded by law, custom, or culture, those penultimate children who realize that the only way they would ever get a blessing from the fathers of this world is by tricking them out of it. Esau and Isaac deserve getting tricked out of this blessing anyway. Isaac played favorites. What kind of a father plays favorites? Esau sells his birthright to Jacob one random day for a pot of stew. What kind of fool trades his inheritance for a pot of stew? Survival of the fittest should go to the one with the brains, not the brawn. Meritocracy rewards those who know what they want and are prepared to do what is necessary to get it by whatever Machiavellian means necessary. But despite my second son, Hope, to make Jacob out to be the righteous one in this story, he is anything but that. He lies to his father. He conspires with his mother to cheat his brother. They destroy whatever hope of family unity there might have been. There is nobody in this story who is entirely innocent, and no one who is entirely guilty. There is no one in this story who deserves to be blessed, either by their father or by God. Which is troubling if you are a person who comes to church looking for a clear and simple moral example of how we are supposed to live. Jacob is the quintessential anti-hero long before Hollywood ever discovered the term, lying and stealing his way to birthright and to blessing. We prefer narratives with simple, straightforward morality lessons. We want our heroes and our villains in clear categories so we can use those same categories to define the world and our place in it. It explains why only hours after the largest mass shooting in American history, there were already religious people leaving their anonymous internet comments of hate announcing that gay people deserve to die. It explains why Donald Trump was on the stump calling again for a blanket exclusion of all Muslims. We cannot tolerate stories where people do not fall squarely into categories of deserving and non-deserving, of blessing and curse, of righteous and unrighteous. There is a limit to blessings, after all, according to this story. Isaac only has one blessing to give. There's not enough blessing to go to both sons, much less to any other children. There is not enough blessing to lift both sons' spirits. There's not enough blessing to undergird both the son who hunts and the son who prefers to stay inside. Not enough blessing for the hairy one and the one with the smooth skin. Not enough blessing for the stereotypically masculine qualities and the one with the stereotypically feminine ones. Not according to Isaac's family. Blessings are limited. Less for you means more for me. More for me means less for you. That is the wisdom that has been passed down from Isaac's line, wisdom that we have adopted again and again in the church and in the culture. There's not enough blessing for Christians and Jews, so we must be the blessed ones. There's not enough blessing for straight and gay, so somebody has to be cursed. There is not enough blessing for Muslims and non-Muslims, so somebody must be on the wrong side of God's favor. There's not enough blessings for people in North Baltimore and West Baltimore. There are not enough blessings for people who want to own a gun and people who want to keep them off the streets. Only one group can be blessed. That is the so-called wisdom that the church and the culture seems on the brink of adopting again and again. There is limited blessing, not enough to go around. Only one can win. If that is what God is trying to teach us, then I'm not sure which side of God's blessing I really want to be on. Jacob wins the birthright inheritance and the blessing, but look at what happens to him. He's on the run for most of his life, running from his double-crossed brother who wants to kill him. His uncle gives him a taste of his own medicine and tricks him into working for 7 years to marry the daughter that he didn't choose. He fights for a blessing from God in the night and walks away limping, wounded forever. There is a cost to this kind of winner-take-all blessing, the perpetual anxiety that the ones that you have beaten, The ones you have cursed, the ones you have held down, the ones you have tricked are always looking to do back to you what you have done to them. The accumulated stuff that you won at the expense of people sometimes closest to you, stuff you are constantly worried about losing. Always looking over your shoulder, suffocating in a cloud of paranoia that is fed by your fear of not enough. What kind of a blessing is that? If God's blessings are limited, if there are not enough to go around, if only one kind of people or one kind of race or one kind of religion or one kind of nationality or one kind of sexuality can win, then there will never be an end to our competitive, violent-filled quest to receive God's limited favor. We will always be chasing after blessings because there will be not enough to go around to red and yellow, black and white. There will not be enough to go around for straight and gay. There will not be enough to go around for Americans or Syrians or Iranians or Iraqis. There will not be enough blessings for Muslims and Christians and Jews. But I'm not so sure that that's the way God really sees it. Even if Jacob does seem to win God's blessing, if it is true that Jacob wins not just his father's blessing, but also the blessing of God, then God actively disrupts the system of blessing that privileged the firstborn in the first place. God disrupted the blessing system established in the Bible, in the book of Deuteronomy, a system seemingly authorized by God in the first place. And if God doesn't seem reluctant to alter that system of blessing over and against earlier biblical interpretation, then why are we? Maybe that is exactly what God wants us to see, the futility of accepting these systems of limited blessing where there's not enough blessing to go around. Esau asks the right question of his father. Do you only have one blessing, father? But neither of them has the courage to even answer the question. Maybe that is the real problem with this family, the willingness by Isaac and Rebekah, by Esau and Jacob, to accept the system of blessing that has been handed over to them is if God doesn't have enough blessing to go around. Maybe that is the problem in our nation right now, a willingness to accept that in order for some to be blessed, others must have to be cursed. That ancient doctrine of double predestination, clearly articulated by our Presbyterian tradition, that since some are eternally predestined for heaven, then certainly that must mean others are destined for hell. Some must be chosen, and therefore others must be rejected, played out in our national politics as if there is not enough blessing to go around. We need a new system of blessing, one that is rooted in the conviction that God has enough blessing for us all. Today is Juneteenth, a worldwide celebration of the end of slavery in the United States. I'm ashamed to say that as a white man, I knew nothing about this celebration until a few years ago. Of course, like many of us, I had learned about the Emancipation Proclamation when on September 22, 1862, Abraham Lincoln declared all slaves free, effective January 1st, 1863, but slavery continued in Confederate-controlled areas. And many slaveholders migrated, often with their slaves, into Texas to continue their old architecture of limited blessing. The war ended on May 9, 1865, but news of the end of the war took a long time to reach Texas, and slavery continued there until June 19, 1865, when Union General Gordon Granger walked out on a balcony in Galveston, Texas, where he had just arrived with 2,000 Union troops to read General Order Number 3. That all slaves were finally free. And that system of limited blessing began to crumble. So as we grieve and remember the loss of gay and lesbian brothers and sisters brought down by hate last week, as we remember a year since the senseless murders of black brothers and sisters in praying together in Charleston, let us not forget the many architectures of limited blessings that have been pulled down by people with the courage to believe that our systems of limited blessing don't ever have to stay that way. God is more than willing to undo these systems of limited blessings. Are we?